Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Now streaming from HRN, this is The Feed Feed. I'm Jay Cohen, editorial director of The Feed Feed, the world's largest crowdsourced food publication and social media community, serving as your daily source of what to cook, bake, and drink. Occasionally joined by our co-founders, Julie and Dan Resnick, we sit down with leaders and upstarts of the food media realm.
So we often say that we're, as Feed Feed, answering this sort of age-old question, which is, what do we eat for, fill in the blank, breakfast, lunch, dinner?
Our approach to doing so involves lifting up voices from culinary content creators all over the world, no matter how big or small their following is. This podcast takes the democratization of food media one step further by giving a behind-the-scenes look of the Epicurean magazines, websites, videos, and accounts you digest every day. We'll discuss everything from breaking into the industry, navigating social media.
That's been my bigger social media thing is like, I think like I just get bored very quickly. And even when things are working really well, I'm like, everyone's doing this. I don't want to do this anymore.
Building and growing community.
People are like, why is it five E's? And I'm like, I don't know. When you say eat, how many E's does that feel like it sounds like? And that's why. No real good rhyme or reason to any of it, but that's also kind of been our style this whole time.
And producing content that resonates with young and old.
You know, if someone doesn't like my writing or the photographs of my book or the design, that's subjective. But if I see that a recipe didn't work, that I really failed someone.
So whether you want to know what goes into food styling a magazine cover, the process of getting a cookbook deal, understanding what the hell TikTok is, or grasping how a recipe can go viral.
I mean, I guess the thing about going viral, too, is that then it's out there. And people start claiming it as their own. And that's happened a few times recently with that tart, which is sort of depressing.
But... drag them. Name names.
I'm not naming any names, but you know who you are.
We'll be covering it all. This is the Feed Feed Podcast. Subscribe to the Feed Feed wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni, and it's January 28th, 2020. It's a special year for us. We're going into our 11th year. We just celebrated 10 years of Heritage Radio Network, and we give a big shout-out to heritageradionetwork.org. We've got some great guests joining us tonight, some of whom have been on before. Beer Boom, the movie documentary, is finally out. It's going to be at some film festivals. It kind of captured this era of... this dawn of New York City craft beer. And you guys introduce yourselves, the filmmakers, because you guys have been on the show before, and we've been waiting, you know, eagerly for this to come out.
I'm Eric Schleyer, one of the producers of Beer Boom.
And Andrew Corey, the other filmmaker in the film.
So, Eric, you said the last time you were on, it was like 2016, you were doing a Kickstarter for this film.
Yes, we were doing a Kickstarter, looking to raise money to produce the film. And we made it. Help! Thank you for the help. So we made our Kickstarter, and from there we just really got the ball rolling, and we started interviewing more brewers, and really got the post-production process going. And it's been a whirlwind ever since.
And thank you again for having us on the show.
Let's just go through. I saw the. I only got a secret preview of the movie last week, and I know it's out there. You're going to be pitching it for distribution, so good luck. But let's just do a quick preview of some of the New York City beer people that are in this movie, because it's definitely a who's who, and it really captured that time. It was like 2015, 2016, around then. Who are some of the brewers that are featured in it?
Yeah, so we started filming in December 2014, and we wrapped in December 2019. So we had a five-year span documenting the growth and the change of the industry over that time span. And Rich Castagna is sitting with us right here.
Hey, Rich, how are you?
Hey, guys.
Bridge and Tunnel.
Bridge and Tunnel. So he's a big part of the film, which we'll get to a little bit later. And we were lucky enough to talk to Bronx Brewery, Brooklyn Brewery, Gun Hill. We also spoke with
Strong Rope, Fifth Hammer, Big Alice,
KCBC,
Lineup, Cat from Lineup.
Yep, you had Yeppe.
Coney Island, Yeppe from Evil Twin.
Yeppe from Evil Twin.
Steve Hindy, you had on.
Steve Hindy, yeah, right. Garrett Oliver.
Steve and Garrett. That was a fun interview. Yeah. We definitely a who's who, and we were able to talk to one of the things we learned in the making of the film was how generous and how connected the community is to one another, and how much they were willing to spend some time to sit down with us and talk about their craft. And that was one of the things that was evident right away in the first two or three interviews, and stayed true throughout the entire process of making the film.
So when you first started up, end of 2014, 2015, what did you see in the New York world of craft beer? What were the things you were initially targeting? Because it changed a lot, but I'd like to see, curious about what you saw through your eyes back then.
It was really interesting to see, because growing up here, it pretty much all we had was like Bud Light and like a couple handful of like independent beers, and New York beer, like growing up as a kid, we really only had like Brooklyn Brewery, and that was it. And since we started shooting this documentary, it's just like exploded. It's been a real beer boom, if you'd like to say.
the number of breweries that then had tap rooms that you could go to the tap room and sit down and drink a beer direct from the source, like, it doesn't get fresher than that. The number of that, I think it doubled over the course of the time of the film, if not close to. And so I would say that that to us was sort of the biggest thing, was how quickly it was expanding. And and that in and itself builds community, right? If people in the neighborhood don't have access, and all of a sudden they do have access to walk down the street and grab a beer, and then to then go to another brewery two blocks away from that and grab another beer, and now you're creating little pockets of beer lovers and beer fans, and the number of craft beer bars that are popping up. You just did a show last week about craft beer bars and the rapid growth of those. So just the industry as a whole was rapidly changing. And so you could talk about every different, the distribution chain, the hops itself, all of those were growing and expanded expanding at a very rapid pace.
Well, I'll tell you, it's been exciting to see, from when you guys were first shooting. I know that you interviewed me at an event like New York City Brewers Choice event. You guys were at a couple other festivals. You really covered, so much. I saw some really great interviews with Steve Hindy and a beer history interview with Peter LaFrance. But at what point did you, so Rich Castagna from Bridge and Tunnel ends up becoming like this featured story. Why did you go to that? Initially, were you just looking for a snapshot of the industry? Were you looking for a story?
The funny thing was, so I used to work in finance and financial planning, but I've always been like a film major. I was a film major in college. I've always been a filmmaker. And I met Andrew at a business event, and we just started chatting, and like we really hit it off over beer. And so I went to a local honey and beer tasting event, and there was like three other breweries there. I think Finback was there, Transmitter was there, and Rich was there. And I ended up chatting with Rich for like about an hour during that event. And it turned out like that week Rich signed a lease for his space. And so that night, like, I called Andrew. I was like, hey, I met this guy. He's pretty cool. He just signed a lease for his space, and he brews beer in his garage. Sounds pretty cool. Let's go talk to him. And then I was looking around to see if there was any competition for a movie about craft beer in New York. There really wasn't a lot. Like, there was
Yeah, what have there been any successful craft beer movies?
Like I've watched this one movie like about 100 times called Beer Wars with Annette Baron, and this came out in 2004, and it was basically small beer, like little beer versus like Budweiser and big beer. And so that movie actually really got me into drinking craft beer. And, you know, fast forward a couple years later, I'm like, I don't really see any movies about the New York City beer scene. And the movies that I have seen from other places, I was like, I think I could do better than that. So
yeah, there's a few that have been made, but, you know, when you watch the film, you can really tell how authentic of a story Rich has. And as Eric mentioned, we came across Rich very early in the filmmaking process. He was literally the second interview that we had. And walking into the film, we didn't have an intention to have it be based around, you know, one brewery in particular. And it touches on a lot of different breweries and the industry as a whole. But we really saw how much of a badass Rich is and was in this whole process. And we think that we were really lucky to have found him and to stumble upon his story, because we saw that and we sort of leaned into it and didn't look back.
Let's make a toast to Rich.
Yeah.
Rich Castano. Rich and Tunnel.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Rich, I met you probably right when you were opening, I think, at my old Jamie's on before you threw out. I might have been the first or one of the first Manhattan bars to carry your beer.
Right. I think you were.
Yeah.
I think you were the first.
And it meant a lot to me. But back then I was drinking your Tiger Eyes, the hazelnut brown beer.
Right.
But let's jump forward. Your backstory, you know, the garage, licensed garage brewery. At the time you weren't it wasn't that unusual. I mean, it was unusual.
Right.
There was Blind Bat on Long Island.
Right.
I think Blind Bat Sloop up in Hudson Valley.
Oh,
and you were also licensed garage breweries at the time.
I remember Blind Bat opened, I think, in 2009. And when I saw Blind Bat opening, I had been homebrewing for a handful of years. And when I saw that he was able to get the licensing for that, I said, wait a minute. And in the same year as when I scrambled up the kettles that became the brew system in 2009, and then from 2009 to 2012 was me building it and then opening the Nano Brewery. But when I saw him able to secure that license, that was the green light.
So it was like it's zoning.
It was in there. It was in my brain.
And it has to be separate from your house.
Right. That's how. Right. It had to be
separate structure.
Separate structure from the house. Right. That was basically it. And I kept it as simple as I could keep it. And really,
weren't running it as a public tasting room.
Right.
So no, there wasn't any.
Right. And that
occupancy.
Was part of the motivation to get out of the garage, because people were constantly contacting me asking if we had a tap room. And I said that I could just keep this address under wraps for just so long. Someone's going to roll up here one day on a Saturday looking to, you know, find a tap room. And here's like, you know, I'm trying to kind of, you know, keep it quiet from the neighbors, you know. And that within the first year, I knew I had to get out of the garage. You remember, I was in that like frenzy to get out of the garage.
Some random guy in the backyard looking for a bar.
Dude,
you've had people show up.
Well, I had mishaps in the garage, and I didn't even think about my own safety. I thought about, are the neighbors going to call the fire department, or like, you know, is someone going to call the cops? You know, that was the first thing, you know, and, you know, so I was always ducking and diving in the garage, even though it was licensed. I just didn't want any trouble with the neighbors, you know, because I was out there 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning or a Friday morning, you know.
And we've had you on before, but let's go back. So you started building the brewery.
Yeah.
And what did you fashion each equipment from? Because you built everything from scratch.
Yeah, I mean, I did it out of necessity initially. I'm still doing it out of necessity. And it's worked. And not only has it worked, but I've learned an exponential amount than when I first started this. And so everything in the garage was built out of reclaimed, repurposed equipment or materials. I mean, what another brewery would have—I could always, you know, rattle it off. What another brewery would have paid $50,000, and I've seen price tags for, you know, a 1.5 barrel system, 45, 50,000. I built for under 4,000, you know? And then boom, here we go. We're wholesaling. System paid for itself, you know? And now we step into, okay, now we're in this lag of like, you know, and then people liked what we were doing. Okay, now let's get out of the garage. Let's get something else. And then it was, okay, how can we do this following the same business model?
How did it feel, you know, when you're in your garage, your kids could come out and see you, you could jump in, use the bathroom or have a meal.
Yeah.
What was that change like when you had to drive to your brewery?
Well, you know, it's funny. The kids took it harder than I did because they used to be able to come out, especially my daughter, Sammy. She'd come out and she, you know, if I was cleaning kegs, she would clean kegs. She's in the documentary. And that's the one thing that she really, to this day, she still talks about that. And she was four, you know. And but then when I moved, and then they didn't, you know, she wasn't cleaning kegs anymore. But I was like, but Sammy, we're not cleaning 9 kegs. Now we're doing 60 of them at a time, you know. But the one thing that I have to say is that it got me out of the elements because it was a garage. I mean, the door opened completely. You know, it was like a roll-up door garage. So I wasn't always looking up at the sky wondering what the weather was going to be like. Now I could be inside and brew, you know, in a sweatshirt or a t-shirt. It's something after getting out of the garage, I mean, honestly, Jimmy, the garage is still licensed, but now it's a mill room. All my grains and my miller, when I mill my grains are in the garage because we only have 2,300 square feet.
Because in the middle of the night, you still want to go outside and do something.
No, honestly, when I come home and I come home from, you know, working my full-time job, right, which I still have, you know, and I got to mill grains and it's freezing cold, it takes me back to that struggle. And even though I got to do maybe, you know, an hour and a half for that 1 week, for that one day for the week, I'm like, man, I'm glad I'm out of the garage, you know.
So what about, Andrew and Eric, what was it like when you heard he's had a licensed garage brewery. The first time you went to visit and film, I mean, you can see it in the film, but explain it in your own words.
It was kind of funny for me because I went to high school like down the road from his house. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know this block.
Yeah, what neighborhood is that in Queens?
Maspeth. Yeah.
The first day that we were filming with him, I think it was a light snow. Yeah. It was very cold outside. And you could instantly tell the vibe was a family vibe, right? Like he's out there brewing. His wife and his kids are coming out saying hello. They leave for the day. And he's kind of brewing and family man at the same time, which is pretty cool to see, you know, doing it on the weekend, something you love, something you do, and you're able to do it with your family around you. So that we got that vibe right away. And you could also tell that Rich was, kind of a man of many talents. He's doing a bunch of things at the same time. You know, what would normally take, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 people, he's doing it all and wearing all the hats at the same time. So it was kind of cool to see someone juggling all those balls and turning around the corner, doing something else. And the whole time we're doing an interview, he's mic'd up, he's talking about what he's doing. And so, and it was our first, you know, we had done an interview, I think the day before we had done an interview at Bronx.
Yeah, it was with Bronx Brewery the day before.
Yeah, so we did it the day before, and that's a massive brewing setup where they are, you know, it's a well-oiled machine with you know, lots of people working it, right? And so to witness that our first day, and then to the next day see one guy doing all that himself, it was just a very interesting contrast to go back to back on those two shoot days. And that was, again, our first production weekend of the film and experience.
Yeah, and at that point when we did that, we did an interview with Rich, and then we were driving back, and we're like, we might have something here. This is, it was kind of like an aha moment. Like, okay, so we could show the larger, and then we asked Chris from the Bronx Brewery. We asked him, so like as a brewery, what would you want to see in a documentary about craft beer in New York? And he flat out said, I would love to see a movie about the different operations, like us as a bigger brewery, and showing like the smaller operations and showing like the difference between the two. And after we left interviewing Rich, I was like, hey, man, I think we got that question solved.
Well, jumping in, so actually, since Rich opened a new brewery, you've been working or have worked as a bartender, Eric.
Yes.
So you filled up a growler today. What beer is this?
This is the Glasshouse Mango. It's a Glasshouse Mango New England IPA. Right now on tap, this is my favorite beer that's on tap right now. I'd love this beer.
Yeah, it's moving.
Watch it. Top me off.
He fills a 64-ounce growler. I know it's going home with him.
Let me talk. But now
it's a selfish move right
we're
there.
We're going back in time. So, Rich, so after, you know, I knew you opened the Garage Brewery, and you did check out. You had one or two other locations that you were working on that didn't quite work out. So tell us about that experience, because at what point did you realize you knew you needed to expand or open a tasting
room? After going through the first year and not being able to keep up even remotely with the wholesale demand, which really it was a lost opportunity back then. You know, a lot of people wanted to have Bridge and Tunnel on tap, and we were just making 9 kegs every batch. So that kind of like, wow, what do we, you know, all this that we're missing out on. But yet, you know, I was a purist about it. I didn't want to contract with anybody, whether it was a mistake or not. I mean, I've never let go of the reins of the brewing process. You know, maybe we could have contracted, gone bigger, you know, got into more accounts. I never did that. I always held on to that idea for better or worse. But I knew that I had to get it bigger, and I knew I wanted to get out of the garage just to get a little in a safer place. Within the first year, I was thinking about it, you know, like searching it out, you know.
So how'd you find the place? Now it's in Ridgewood, Queens. How did you find that?
There was a number of them.
And when comes out, you got to see Beer Boom in the movie, because it shows Rich. You went into that space when it was raw, and what did people say? That this was not worth your time?
No, well, I mean, there was a lot of other spaces that I checked out. I mean, I if there was anybody that said, you know, there was a lot of spaces, and I got a lot of that. This isn't going to work out. This isn't a good fit. I mean, I didn't even want to say some of the neighborhoods I was in, but like there was one neighborhood where my wife said, listen, I know you're going to come here later on after work and you're going to work here. She goes, I don't want to have to worry about you every night coming home, you know? And that was the one that I was on the fence on right before I came into my space in Ridgewood, right? But I wanted to be in Ridgewood. That was the thing. And there wasn't enough out in Ridgewood. And then when I finally found, what's interesting is that I found the space on my, I had a real estate agent. Guy wasn't helping me at all. I hope you're listening. You helped me in no way whatsoever, right? And
how come that wasn't in the movie?
And I still grind an axe with you. You know who you are, you and your family. Just saying. Thank you. Because I lost a great spot because they went with somebody else just for a couple extra bucks. Anyway, so I ended up going on Craigslist myself, and I found the listing for the space that I'm in now in Ridgewood. And it just so happened to be down the block from an account that I already had, Houdini's.
Pizza place, right?
Yeah. And I was like, wait a minute. And then I let it go for a couple of days because, again, me being hard-headed, I wanted to stay in Queens. And I thought, that's in Brooklyn. I can't. How can I do that, you know? And then I called the landlord. I said, just curious, what is your address? Is it Queens or Brooklyn? This is like 2 or 3 days later. I came back to it. He goes, no, we're Queens. And I said, can I come down today and take a look at your space, you know? And when I walked in there, it was one of the cleanest spaces that I've seen. Because I saw a lot. I sampled a lot of spaces. When I saw his, I saw the potential immediately. It just needed me to come in and do what I needed to do.
So, Eric, so by that point, you guys were fully invested in covering Rich's journey.
Yeah, we so throughout the whole process, we were always talking about, okay, what can we do to make this stand out? Like, how can we make this a well-rounded film? So one thing that we tried to do was we have a history section in the film, and then we also focus a lot on business in the film. So a lot of documentaries and a lot of shows that are out there, they talk about like, oh, this is this hop, this is this grain, this is this, this is this. But we were like, let's talk about like the meat and potatoes of business in New York City. Because this, and that's one thing that that's different with New York City as compared to other places, is craft beer and breweries in New York is a relatively newer concept for us, because it's very, very hard to do it here. Like you've got space constraints, you've got a lot of like a lot of money needs to go through it. Like we've interviewed Sam from Dogfish Head. He started homebrewing on the Upper West Side, and his whole interview was basically like, yeah, I would have loved to build my brewery here, but it would have cost millions of dollars. So he ended up in a smaller state, and it was a lot, you know, it was a lot cheaper for him to build his brewery. And once we, it's just a lot that goes into being in New York City, and it's kind of like a pride, like it's a sense of pride saying like, I'm a New York brewer, you know. It's
Haley. Let's one of your other guests just came in. This guy's going to introduce himself because he's got some special constraints.
That's very kind. That's very kind. Nice to be here, everybody. Yeah, my name's Aaron Bell, and you know,
you're a producer on the movie.
That's right. You know, huge aficionado and big fan of the movie, and these two guys, especially Eric and Andrew, have put together quite an enjoyable film, and we got to see the debut up at the Lincoln Center a couple weeks back. Great turnout.
What about but you're like the business guy, so the business of beer, you know, where do you fit in, you know?
I see what's going on. So first you butter me up with the Glasshouse Mango, strongest beer I've had all day. And now you're looking for trade secrets. Yeah. No, it's such an interesting angle that these guys present in the film, because they go a little bit beyond the X's and O's of making good beer. One of my favorite quotes is the Gun Hill guys are talking about, you know, what makes the beer so special in New York is the water, same as the bagels. And I just love that you get those meaty bits that are so special and essential to New York. But where I come in is kind of on the laurels, coattails of where Eric started back in the financial planning world. And, you know, I'm an advisor and a partner for a small firm in Midtown. And, you know, we work in 38 states, but one of my passions is working with breweries. I've fully drinking the Kool-Aid, the alcoholic Kool-Aid. You know, I've had a good friend, a great client who went from his favorite job in the world, being a brewmaster, to, you know, I would call it the dream job, to the dream of owning a brewery and starting that dream from a business plan and going up. And to see in the movie the same dream in action as Rich has lived it is so rewarding for the audience, even though we know Rich went through hell.
So just so you know, Aaron is in the film, but here's like a business question. So are breweries looking for funds? Probably yes, but are you placing people with banks or loans or private investment? Where do you see the funding coming for breweries?
You know, if you've got a guy like Rich who you sit down and you score your options and you say, okay, we could take out a 7-figure loan and work like an animal and pray to God our three daughters can figure out how to get on the other side. Or you've got the wherewithal, you know, the gravitas, if you will, to put in the sweat equity, you know, suddenly you've got other options. And, you know, where we come in is trying to help a person who's thinking about a business in any genre think about their options. For some of the breweries we work with, we were able to source capital, you know, from maybe our local regional bank on really good terms. Interest rates are low. It's not a bad option to look at, but it's important to surround yourself with a team of people who cares. You know, not some flighty real estate agent who's going to sell you out for another couple bucks. And so, you know, it's about that loyalty and knowing that the people who are helping you run faster actually care about you,
And listeners, just so you know, when you see the Beer Boom movie, Aaron is one of the stars of it. And as you can tell, he speaks really well. But back to that, Rich, so with the money. So you know, it's one thing you open in your garage brewery. You already own the property. You know, you had years without paying rent to build that brewery out. So let's fast forward. Ridgewood, you signed the lease, you got the space.
Right.
You know, like kind of what Aaron was saying, at that point, did you ever consider raising money or taking investors? Or did you and Lisa always say, we're just going to do this ourselves?
You know,
I mean, I've always worked, and I haven't stopped working since I started the brewery. I saved money, you know, so I had some money, you know, life savings. I'm super careful with it because I, you know, there's a lot of people dependent on me. I have three kids, my wife, you know, four cats, a dog, a fish, you know. I mean, let's be,
my
you
retirement know. Fund.
Yeah, right, right, exactly.
A whole bunch of brewers now.
Right.
Bartenders now.
Yeah. Right. So, but I felt that, you know, the money that I had, that I could, if I built it myself, I could potentially get through it without having to take out a loan or partner with anybody. And so that's what I did. I kept the stuff that I learned while building the Nano Brewery. I applied it as long as I could.
So it's very old school. It's like basically there's one less stress you have to deal with. There's no one trying to collect money from you. There's nobody trying to tell you what to do.
Honestly, I'm not going to, like, I don't want to give myself props over it. If anything, I'll say straight up, I'm probably way less sophisticated than a lot of other breweries. And maybe it works to my disadvantage sometimes, maybe often, but we don't have any debt. And it's because I've did everything myself. I built it on my own. I bleed out when I have to bleed. I stop the bleeding before we, you know, before I keel over. Like, and it's like, you know, I'm putting it on those terms, but it really, that's how it equates in my mind, you know? And as a result, I mean, I was able to build it. I mean, how like, throw a number out there, how much a 10 barrel system would cost. I saw there was another brewer once, he rolled in, you know, he bought a secondhand 5 barrel system. You know, I'm in the mix of kind of a conversation, and the 5 barrel system cost $250,000. I built a 10 barrel system on under $20,000 myself by pulling tanks off of farms, by repurposing old vintage stainless steel. That's how I did it.
And you went around too. You traveled in the film. It shows you actually.
Yeah.
You went with, where'd you go in the film? And you went with a truck to pick up something.
I used to have the woman at Home Depot on a first name basis, and I used to roll in there. I don't know. Maybe she didn't know I was married, but she always used to hook me up every time I needed a
she knew you were married, Richie.
I don't know. Well, I kept a little covert because it used to get me a truck, you know, because there would be a waiting line, you know, and so.
Flirting.
She really liked beer. That's what
Rich gets done.
And I'd get a those pickup trucks. You'd be able to haul at least 2,500 pounds, right? Grab a pickup truck and go wherever I had to go, and get what I had to get.
So in the movie, where did you go?
So I
rode shot that. You shot that yourself.
I road tripped up to New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, yeah.
Right. That was a boiler that I found on Craigslist 5 months prior. And I paid the guy, and I asked him, and I trusted him. I put my trust in him. I said, I'm going to pay you, but can you hold the boiler for me? And so he did. And I road tripped up in a snowstorm. He loaded it on with a forklift, and then he was going to leave me. I said, wait a minute, dude. I'm driving five hours back. Can we figure this out so that this thing doesn't go flying off? And we spent another hour and a half working together, building a cradle for it. And by the time I left, we practically hugged each other. It was like a bonding moment. And I drove that thing all the way back to New York. The next day is when I met, because I said, Eric, you know, I'm going to be pulling some stuff off. Maybe it's, you know, if you want to film. And he was like, absolutely. He came in, and that was the day that we pulled the boiler off, and we moved all of the tanks. And I got to put a quick mention out to a friend. I haven't seen him in a little while. The owner, it was two brothers that owned Platt's Hardware on Forest Avenue in Ridgewood. Because I had another space that I had all my equipment in. That's another story. I had rented another space, right? And the landlord told me that I can install a boiler. And then when it was time to install a boiler, he told me he wasn't the landlord. So when he introduced me to the landlord, he said, I had no idea you were here. You got to get your crap out of here. I don't want you here. So in one day, I had to offload all of my stuff and load it into my friend's behind his hardware store. And it stayed there for a year. And that day when we hooked up, me and Eric, I offloaded the boiler, and then you came with me, and we drove back and forth to Ridgewood to offload all those Thanks.
That's awesome. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a minute and talk more about Beer Boom Movie on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. Become a member, support this nonprofit institution with over 30 shows about food, beer, chefs, and other things that are really delicious. Hey, we got the star of Beer Boom Movie here, Rich Castagna of Bridge and Tunnel, and the producers and directors, Eric, Aaron, and Andrew. So we're tasting a second Bridge and Tunnel beer. What is it, this one?
It's a lobster saison.
It's a Bridge and Tunnel lobster saison. And so, like, you know, we're catching up with you, but you've expanded. You've put in your new brewery a few years ago with the tasting room in Ridgewood. Yeah. Are you still making all the beers yourself?
100%. I've been the brewer for every batch.
So what? So why lobster saison? What made you do this? Because you've got some great ones, like your hazelnut brown ale, yeah, which was one of the first beers that I ever tasted.
Yeah, it was the third one. Which, right.
That's on tap.
When
right
people
now.
Think about nuts, this is what we're talking about, ingredients and what a good brewer does. People think about nuts, they say pecan. They don't think a flavor of nut is very subtle. People think pecan pie, and they're thinking sweets and spices. So with yours, your hazelnut was this like nice hint of nuttiness, which really which was a traditional English style beer, having nuts
Southern
and,
English
and,
style
and a brown ale.
Yep.
But so this is a lobster saison. If I saw the label, it would freak me out. So why lobster saison and how do you make it?
All right, so what I tell people behind the bar, people ask the same thing.
Is it red? I don't know.
Well, it was redder last year, but I felt that the darker notes, because lobster is a subtle flavor, so it buried it a little bit with like these caramel notes, you know?
Is it lobster shells? Is it whole lobsters?
Well,
is it the lobster, the boil?
I'll be honest with you, Jimmy.
Seasoning?
I've had a lot of people ask me, how do I make this lobster saison? And I don't mean to be coy about it, but until the day comes that I'm pushing beer in a lot of other locations, I'm always going to be a little protective about the recipes that I frankly ask nobody how to do, you know. But
so don't tell
I can
us.
Guarantee you there's 40 lobsters in this beer, right? Yeah. For a 200 gallon batch, there's 40 lobsters in this beer.
And you ate them afterwards, or?
What's that?
Do you eat them too?
That was before.
We eat them, right?
Well, Aaron, so now we're talking about that. So he's hinting at, let's say one day they expand and they have all these recipes. How do you advise a business like Rich's about those types of things to think about down and, you know, on the edge of the horizon, however you say it?
That's ideal, is to have a client, you know, a business owner who's thinking that many steps ahead, a great chess player. It's about startup has its own you know, set of pitfalls and planning priorities, but then you're in the growth phase and you want to think about what are your differentiators, you know, how many lobsters will make this beer stand out, you know, and you want to think about, okay, I've got the tap room of my dreams, it's cranking, you know, there's great upside in selling beer. Where do I put the storage? Where do I start expanding the different utilities that I need? And maybe I can go off location and reinstitute the old garage, or maybe I need a new warehouse. So having a partner who actually cares about the business and the three steps ahead might help you with the introductions you need, might help you think about, you know, the boring stuff. Well, if I make those adjustments, I'm going to have an increase in insurance. If I hire up, I'm going to potentially be paying more in benefits, and to be able to score out where those dollars are going to have to come from might help you price, you know, all the other things that you're producing appropriately.
Great. So now backstory on Eric here. So Eric, I just found out last week in the news, a historic Queens bar was going to close and didn't close. Tell us about what the name of that bar was and your connection to it.
So that was Near's Tavern So Nears has been around 100.
It was big news about two years ago.
Yeah, it was big news.
It was going to close, and the mayor stepped in, and somehow it didn't close.
Yeah, it's been open for 190 years. It's in Woodhaven. So I grew up in Woodhaven. My dad was a bartender there for like 20 years before they renovated it. So
that's your story. So your dad was a bartender there.
Yeah, he was a bartender for 20 years there. And so when they announced that they were going to close, I went down there with my mom. We got lunch there, and I was interviewed by the Daily News, which was pretty cool. And so basically, they were going to close, but then the next 2 days, the mayor stepped in, and there was a couple of council members there, and they basically forced the
So what was your quote in the Daily News? What did you tell them?
Oh, I said, it's a shame that places like this and like Loy, the owner, and it's a shame that places like this, and Loy's done a great job building this, like rebuilding this place, and it's a shame that this place would close, because it's businesses like this give the city its soul. And with this place, the city's losing a bit of its soul with this place closing.
And then, so Rich, you know, also in the film, you're a big defender or advocate for small business, independent breweries, but independent businesses.
Yep.
And let's talk more about that, because I know you're passionate about it. I'm passionate about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, independent businesses. It's where this country started. Not being, trying to be nostalgic about anything, but I mean, unfortunately, it's hard to be an independent business these days. But if people have the opportunity and they're willing to do whatever it takes to make that business, breathe, I mean, it really is like, a child, then there could be a lot more small businesses. And I think that for most people, I think a large majority have that like dream. And, sometimes I see people, like I talk about what I'm doing, and I could go a little bit through some soul crushing kind of experiences, getting what I need to get for my family on my day to day. But if somebody asks me, hey, what's going on? What's going on at the brewery? And like, it lights me up, And sometimes, like, some people feel like I could see. They feel like, man, I wish I could do that. It's like, but you can. You can do it if you're willing to hit it as hard as you have to hit it, and you got the right support,
Cheers. Cheers to Rich Castagna. Back to the movie, guys. So, when you were picking subjects to shoot, I don't know the terminology for that, but you got everybody. You got Steve Indy. Yeah. You got the guys at Bronx Brewery. You really covered... to me, there's a snapshot of craft beer in New York, especially at that time in 2015. A lot of really great footage. What about women in beer? I mean, I know you had Lindsay. You ended up having Lindsay Steen, who to me is a great salesperson, who came from, she'd worked at a cider place, and luckily for KCBC, they have her. And you also had Katerina Martinez when she was still doing the lineup here. Did you decide... But you needed to have more women. Were there any political or
it just kind of happened
equity issues that you needed to address?
It just kind of happened that way. So we interviewed Kat, and she became like our How to Brew section, because Andrew shot with her brewing beer, and then we just kind of like just interviewed more people, and we went to a. We went with Allie, the other producer on the film. We went with her to the Women in Beer event at Five Boroughs.
Pink Boots Society.
Yeah, the Pink Boots Society beer, that event. And just the stories that they were telling about them getting into beer was pretty inspirational. Like that's one thing I have to say about this, about us making this movie. It's like it's been inspiring, like just to see like everybody. It doesn't matter if you're a guy or a guy or a gal or a woman or man, just everyone just going out there and just following their dream. Like it's been like pretty inspirational, just seeing everybody going for it.
And you asked earlier about some of the changes that we were seeing, back in 2014, 2015, and it is something that changed in the process of us making the film. You know, more women have become involved in the beer scene in New York. It's just a fact. It's what happened. And so I would say that we sort of like grew that section in the film about halfway through the filmmaking process. So it was about a 5-year process to make the film. And about halfway through, we decided like, okay, this is another part of the industry that we need to cover and we need to highlight, because it's important to that it's happening and showcase it. But also there's a one really a salient line in the film where Lindsay Storm talks about, you know, looking up to other women in the industry. And if you're a young girl growing up and seeing other women that have done it before, you're able to visualize yourself in that role.
And Rich, you have that firsthand, don't you?
Well, you know, it's fun. I was just going to say that Andrew and Eric told me three and a half years, I think, into their documentary that they liked my story enough that they were going to, you know, have me as more part of it, right? And I was surprised. When we saw the film, it was the first time I saw it, and I was surprised to see there was a lot of footage of my girls. You know, I have three daughters, and I was actually, I was really happy to see, to have them see that part of the female brewers and, you know, women in beer, because I think I said that to you the very first interview, that if you never know, maybe one of my kids will take hold of this, you know. And it kind of like, if anything, I think it you know, it's really a message for, like, you know, kids in general, but daughters, you know, females, you know, embrace your talents, you know. And I appreciated that you did put that in, you know. And when I was able to see it with my kids, and, you know, they were part of it, but also like this theme that I've been trying to tell them, but then to see it from somebody else's perspective, you know, I'm trying to kind of sculpt them into those kind of women too.
No, that's great. You guys did a great job with the film. Of any of you, Aaron, Andrew, or Eric, is there one question that you want to ask Rich that didn't get asked in the film?
That's a good
question. You got like 10 seconds. So. Otherwise, we're going to close out. Aaron does, I know.
Well, yeah, I've always got questions.
Aaron Bell.
Just listening to Rich's iconic voice and taking us back, taking us way back to when we began filming this, you know, it's an example we can all live by, that starting a business can be for all of us. And, you know, Garrett at Brooklyn Brewery had a great quote in the film that... it's probably only the right choice for somebody who wakes up every day and this is all they can think about. And, you know, for Rich, I guarantee when you watch this film and you see him in action and you see him put on about 30 pounds of muscle over the course of an hour and a half, as we go over the 5 years of trials and tribulations of him building this brewery, you'll see that he's waking up every day with that passion. And all of a sudden, he's not at a finish line. Maybe he's actually at his true starting block, having run enough laps to know the race and built the infrastructure, that he's ready to go ahead with pride. And now he's thinking, who's going to inherit this? Who's going to take over after me? And you've got, you know, six eyes looking up at you. And so, you know, what I'll say.
That was a great, I'm going to cut you off.
Okay.
That was a great quote. And,
yeah.
And there's many great quotes in that film. But Garrett also said that probably of all the people that are talking about opening a brewery, only 5% of them are really cut out for it. And Rich is one of them.
That's
Rich,
right.
You want to close out with anything? Thank you.
Yeah, man. I mean, I really do appreciate it. It's interesting for me to hear your perspective on it. I know how the day-to-day, you know, struggles of living it. I certainly don't see it the way you guys do, but I really do appreciate it. And if it's an inspiration to anybody, I'm realizing when I first saw the documentary that people came to me afterward and said, you know, you like that inspires me to chase what I'm chasing right now, but I keep slacking off.
But the beer's got to stay good. That's the whole thing.
Well, we already got that covered.
And then Richie, you know? Last one. I see there's some stories around the city. You know, 5,000 tons a day of stone were, you know, excavated when the Second Avenue subway was built. How many pounds or tons of rocks did you dig up when you were building the new Ridgewood Brewery?
Yeah, I did all the jackhammering myself, pulled all that stone out. Then it was time to move it. Instead of getting a dumpster like everybody else, I rented a Home Depot truck, filled milk crates, and brought it to a recycling place that weighed it. It was over 10,000 pounds.
It's an exciting part of the film, guys. You can see him putting stones and milk crates and sliding them out. And, you did it. It's probably the one. You probably won't build another brewery,
another one now, actually.
You're home, too.
So we got a lot. Let's go around the room, guys. Everybody say their names and their affiliation, and we're going to close this out.
Eric Schleyer, filmmaker, Beer Boom.
Beer Boom, the movie.
Andrew Corey, filmmaker, Beer Boom, the movie. And also, please follow us on Instagram at Beer Boom Movie to get updates on when we will be releasing the film for mass consumption.
Looking forward to it, guys.
Yeah, Aaron Bell, advisor at CPAF, top 400 advisory group, and huge fan of Beer Boom.
And film producer. All right.
Rich Castagna, Bridge and Tunnel Brewery, Queens, New York, and soon to be Liberty, New York.
Well, thank you guys so much. I think I had a sneak peek of that a while ago. Thanks so much for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. If you have any questions for us at Beer Sessions Radio, you can email us at askbeersessionsradio@gmail.com, and we'll answer on the air. Next week, if you're listening live, we'll be hosting the team from Hopewell Brewing, who will be visiting from Chicago. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producer, Dylan Hoyer, our intern, Kevin Chang Barnum, and engineer extraordinaire, Matt Patterson. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo! Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for...
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.